Good morning to you, Matt.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're going well, thank you. Did we find you down sort of Moorabool Valley, down sort of that way?
That's where the winery is, yeah. We're just, the town is actually called Bannockburn as well, so it's a little town that was on the sort of Midland, well, the Midland Highway, as the story goes, as I understand it, was the road that the miners took to get to Ballarat in the gold mining days. So Bannockburn is the name of a town, and it's also the name of the town in Scotland where the people came from. And that same group of people followed the gold rush to central Otago. So there's actually a region, not so much a town, in central Otago called Bannockburn too.
Yeah, right.
Making some nice Pinot as well.
Beautiful
they do.
Pinot,
yeah, coincidentally.
Yeah, well, that's consistent, so that's good. So, Matt, you started in at Bannockburn in 2015 from British Columbia, Canada. What made you leave an amazing region like you know, British Columbia, to travel to the little town of Bannockburn?
I'd been at Bannockburn in 2005, so my role there was simply as winemaker for that vintage of 05 after Gary Farr left and before they appointed a full-time winemaker, and that was Michael Glover. And so then I was away for 10 years, and it was genuinely amazing. Like, it's beautiful. It was a young region as opposed to a lot of Australia's regions, which are mature in a sense. You know, there's always innovation and change. But this is, you know, really early days in the story of British Columbia was when I arrived. It was only, you know, sort of 30 years old as a region at that time. And I was charged with lots of really, you know, sort of unusual roles and opportunities for what was a relatively early part of my career. But I had been away for 10 years, and you don't get offered jobs like Bannockburn very routinely, and so I think I would have been a fool to say no. So yes. I came back, and 10 years was a good amount of time overseas, frankly. It was wonderful, informative, and great mates. And you know, I've got a Canadian passport, but I do feel partly Canadian on the back of that experience too. But it was long enough, and so I came back.
Yeah, and what did Stuart? I mean, Stuart Hooper was the owner of Bannockburn, so established in 1974. But what did he say of that region?
Well, I unfortunately never got a chance to meet him. So a lot of what I understand of what he was looking for has come to me from his two daughters who own the business today and our vineyard manager who's worked out there for 37 years and certainly was well acquainted with Stuart. You know, one of the stories being that Stuart would drive past, wind his window down and say to Lucas, remember, you're a wine grower, not a grape grower, and another little throwaway lines like that. But as the story goes, they the Hooper family, just to go back a step, from Geelong, and their background here was in grocery stores, you know, prior to the dominance of that sector by Woolworths and Coles and Aldi and so on. There was lots of independent grocers, and I grew up in Sydney, and I can remember going to Franklin's Jewel and Black and White and all these other ones before all of this changed. And so you can still see Hoopers over the top of streets like Packington Street in Geelong. There's one very obvious one where Hoopers is over the top of a store, and they had those throughout Geelong and also regional Vic. And but based in Geelong and have been here for probably quite a long time. I actually don't know how long, but generations. And so Stuart Hooper was a great wine lover at a time when table wine was not a you know, sort of as prominent and obviously prominent as it is now. And again, stories go that he was drinking DRC out of coffee flasks at the footy games and stuff. But
nice.
Yeah, if you can get away with that.
Yeah.
So he was passionate enough about it to want to get involved. He had some mates that he'd, like a community of people like Ian Holm and others back in those days. And so there was a group of them that were really passionate, would get together and drink wine, which is still one of the buildings on the property is where they used to get together and have barbecues and drink nice wine. I think There was a search, and the two ladies I work for now were relatively young and were bribed with ice cream to go on these drives through the countryside and talk to farmers about rainfall soils and so on, because there was some limited sort of viticulture around, I think one or two. So Idle was in the 60s, but maybe one other preceded our planting in 1974. So it was definitely the first vineyard for over a century since phylloxera devastated the region around that mining boom. It was the first replanting in the vicinity of Bannockburn. Yeah. And so it was an old potato, well, actually it was old mixed farm, one of the little bits of pushback we got on getting organic certification was some of the residue from the potato farming that had happened. And so dendrol, I think, was the chemical that was resident in the soil. It has a very long half-life and it had only just snuck below the threshold that was allowed. But it was a mixed farm, and so there was no first-hand feedback on suitability of grapes, but you would get information about rainfall, timing of rainfall, type of soil, frost, and other factors that that would have lent him to make this decision. So it was initially 3-odd acres of Shiraz and an acre of Malbec, and then a couple of years later, we started with Chardonnay and Pinot and Riesling. And I think Cab Sauv at that same time. And then finally, the winery property, three properties that we own, was planted out in starting in about 1980 and continued with Pinot and Chardonnay. Shiraz was added again, and more Cab, more Merlot. Sauvignon Blanc was quite a big planting at that time. And we've made some changes over that since then, but that's more or less the 50 acres that we farm. We're largely in place by about 1990.
Yeah, and so the organic certification, so that was 21, was it?
We got the certification, I'd be going back in my mind to guess actually, but it started probably around 2017.
Yep.
We had to farm 1 year organically, but not auditable. And then we had to farm 2 years organic, auditable. And then we passed that audit. So it's probably certified 2019 or 2020 off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And we started with the close planted blocks just because we could say that the equipment that we used there was only used there. And then we wouldn't have to deal with the issue of cleaning equipment between conventional farming and organic. We just wanted to start with a portion of the property, and that was the stuff that made sense to us at the time.
Yeah, so that close planting vineyard, so Serre in 84. Mm-hmm. And is it true that it's the oldest planted vineyard?
That's what we believe, yeah. And we've been saying it, and no one's given us a different answer.
Good.
So that'd be, that's it. And we've gone.
In what context, the oldest?
The first high density vineyard planted in Australia.
Okay.
And maybe just even more specifically, the first high density Pinot Noir vineyard planted in Australia.
Yeah, so it's is it 1.2 by 1.2?
1.2, that's right. So the row spacing is 1.2 and the vine spacing is 1.2. And then the additions that we've made to the close planting, we have to maintain that same row width because that's our equipment, but the vines are now actually 1 metre apart.
Wow.
So for context again, for our listeners, what would a normal vineyard be planted at?
Well, in the 1980s, the tractors were still quite large, and so our rows are 3 metres wide, and the plants are about 2 metres between them. And then as tractors got more powerful, the rows could be narrower, and so our more modern version would be 2.5 by 1.8, and you can go certainly narrower than that, but that's a good spacing for our farming. That's we've planted a couple of blocks in the last couple of years, and we've maintained that.
And so the whole conversation around close planted, and I recently got to try some wines that were normal spacing versus close planted Pinot. And what do you say? I mean, Matt, you've obviously, you know, looked at this over, you know, the last amount of time that you've been, you know, up to nearly 10 years at Bannockburn. What do you see as being the difference in the fruit?
Well, I think my the rationale for it, I think, is just simply as an ode to Burgundy, because that was Stuart's great love. But the result of it is that the vines very much share the resources, and so the ripeness of the block is very uniform, very consistent across the block, whereas you can imagine at the other end of the spectrum, you could plant two vines 100 metres apart and they'd bear no relationship to each other. One could be in slightly sandier soil, one could be in slightly more clay-rich soil, and yet you have to pick them on the same day. The one that's in the clay will be less ripe probably than the one that's in the sand, which has had less access to water. And so you've got two ripenesses. They combine to have a you know, a BOMAY of 13.5 or whatever they're going to have, and they're going to have a TA and they're going to have a pH. But there's actually two ripenesses that have been mixed into that that so-called ferment. Whereas in Serray, the whole block is 13.5 and has the same chemistry more or less, because they do share resources so intensively across the block. So I'm in a wider spacing. If I go back to that 1980 spacing of 3 metres between the rows, I'm forced to average the ripeness as I walk through, and that's the way I make a decision for picking, is just to walk through a block and taste and look at the condition of the vines. And obviously there's other things that play into it, but I need to be in the vineyard walking through, and then I, in those blocks that are further apart, I need to sort of average the ripeness in my head, whereas in the close planted blocks, I don't need to do that because they're all the same ripeness.
I find it fascinating. Sorry to geek everyone out on that. But the other thing too, I'm so pleased to see the Chardonnay, a single vineyard Chardonnay named after Lucas. Like 37 years working for Bannockburn is outstanding, and I know he's a great individual. And
is that Lucas Grigsby?
Lucas Grigsby.
It's definitely a direct nod to him, but his wife has been working with us in a part-time role for a lot of those years. His two boys have worked with us in their school holidays and here, there and everywhere. And I mean, it's a family business, and so it's a family acknowledgement. Definitely Lucas in particular, because that's a pretty serious body of work. And it's probably true that no one will ever know that block like or that vineyard like Lucas does now, and he's still pushing on. He's not resting at this moment. But when I say, you know, sort of what and it's not, I mean, the worst version of that story would be someone who just, you know, sits around and tells stories about the good old days. He's not that at all. He's the guy that is still looking to the future. And the greatest, you know, sort of benefit, apart from having a great guy around, is that he can anticipate things. We don't often react to things. We're mostly anticipating. And so if you want to talk about organics or sustainability or, you know, some of these goals in viticulture, he's our prime resource in doing any positive good in the vineyard, actually, along with our team, who are pretty amazing at this moment, actually. But 37 years of wisdom is impossible to replace, I have to say.
Yeah, and just getting that certification. And obviously the climate and the soils and, you know, that site really lend itself to organic growing. But but to keep pushing that and keep, you know, evolving as a older vineyard or older site, I think it's, such a credit to the family, yourself, and obviously Lucas driving that as well.
Absolutely, Lucas. And it's true. I mean, it's only just recently occurred to us that we have got a vineyard that's starting to get genuinely old, and we genuinely have to think about it as that. We're celebrating 50 years this year based on the plantings from 1974.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Have you got something planned?
We have. We're just sort of midway through some renovations at the moment, and once we finish that, that'll allow us to properly celebrate on site, and then there'll be some events off site too. So the vines were planted in the spring of 1974, so that sort of luckily buys us a bit of time to get organised, and in the spring of this year we can go back around and celebrate the 50 years properly.
Mm. Amazing. And, yeah, just some amazing stories coming out of that vineyard and winery, and some of the characters, some of the wine styles, and, yeah, you know, some of the hard, really hard challenges that that vineyards face with hailstorms and all sorts of things. But then, the great vintages. So tell us about so you're releasing the 23 wines, so Chardonnay, Pinot. How is that vintage and in contrast to 24?
23 was... we've had cold vintages since 2020, and 2023 was the first year that it... a couple of things. I mean, 23 was a small crop because we had poor fruitfulness. So in part, the crop is determined the year prior by the sunshine onto the buds as the vines are growing in the previous season. And it was the third cold season. It was actually a year where we had a fairly big canopy. There wasn't much sun in the first place, and so the fruitfulness was down. So that is to say the bunch count was fairly low.
Yeah.
And then the bunches had relatively few berries on them. So that's just a consequence of the vine, I suppose, adapting to the seasons and not anticipating the ability to ripen things after, sort of the previous season. Yeah. Giving it an indication that that might be the case. But 23 was a warm year. 22 was a decent year, but it was another high rainfall year. But we had sunshine in 23, and so it was a small crop. But it's not always true that a small crop or a small yield is concentrated, but it definitely had aspects of that. But it's also a bit... for our vineyard crew, right from the start of the season, they could see that there wasn't very much crop there. So they had to do all the same work for what they knew was going to be a small crop. And if things didn't go well, as agriculture can can happen, then it could have been even smaller. And in fact, in 2023 was the first year that we lost any of our crops to mildew. And so one of our bigger Pinot blocks was hit by it, and the Grigsby Chardonnay, ironically, was the other one that was affected. So production did get decreased there. We didn't make any 13, 14 wines, which is disappointing to us because we like to make those. But it's a small crop, but the season was pretty good. It's also one of those years where, because you've got relatively smaller amounts coming per block, you're not able to do very many variations on winemaking or different ideas. You can't explore them very easily because you just don't have the material to do that with. And so it was a fairly, straight down the line winemaking type year where the blocks were just fermented in quite conventional ways. For example, the Serre block, there was one fermentation, and so that was either going to be good enough to be Serre or not, but there wasn't a range of Serre ferments to choose from with different whole bunch percentages or picked on different days or whatever. There was just one single shot, and that's that, and likewise for SRH, actually. So, strange year, in good in terms of... season and so on, but small in crop and a bit limiting in winemaking. But in the end of it, the Chardonnay and the Pinot that you mentioned are basically the entire blend across the whole site, minus the little bottlings of SRH and Serre. And so it's actually kind of an interesting wine that
Whole blend. In a lineup down the track in 10 years' time, it's going to be a really fascinating thing to have a look at, right?
Yeah, exactly. And every year is different. It's like you wish you might be able to do a meaningful experiment, but there's so many parameters that are sort of sliding in this way or that way. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to follow, that's for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely. Matt, we're going to have to let you go. I'm sorry, mate. Thank you. Now, if people want to come and see you, they can make an appointment and come. There's no actual cellar door set up.
That's right. And as I mentioned, with the construction, we're just sort of taking a little pause on that. We don't have the facilities just at the minute to even do our appointment visits. But once we do, we look forward to getting back into that. And so that's, as I say, probably in 4 months' time or 5 months' time, come into the spring, and we'll be looking forward to having people out there again.
Yeah, but in the meantime, just place your orders online.
But do you have a newsletter or anything that you send?
We do, yeah. So, yeah, around the releases of wine. So that release has just gone out with an offer to our mailing list. And some wines like the Gamay, for example, are pretty limited and more or less only available to the mailing list. So that's all available via the website. And
how do you get on the mailing list, just as our last little question?
Well, directly contact us, but there is a mechanism through the website to do so.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you, Matt. You're making some beautiful wines. Just gorgeous.
Oh, thanks, Sam. No, it's a team effort. We're trying our best.
Yeah.
Look forward to having a look at some 24s when they're ready, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Matt, thank you. And enjoy the rest of your afternoon. I'm sure it's going to come out a beautiful day down there.
It has been, a beautiful string of days, actually. Mm. So just balmy, no wind, and nice for doing a retaining wall, as it turns out.
Excellent.
As winemakers do, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Reminding you you're a farmer. And
that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, mate.
Good luck.
Enjoy. We'll speak to you again. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys. See you.